5,000-year-old stone circle in a Wiltshire village, the struggle of the individual to remain free, the eternal conflict of light and dark, with a bit of grey in the middle. I'm Stuart Lee, and over the next half hour, I'm going to tell you how all these things combined in one of the most extraordinary television series of the 70s, in the tale of archaeology, occult ritual, and chopper bikes that is Children of the Stones. Back in the 1970s, children's television was packed with weird and wonderful drama programmes.
You do remember the voices, don't you, Stephen?
What do you want?
I want to help you.
Powers of evil take many forms. That's not real, child.
After school, when you turned on that box in the corner of the lounge, there was every chance you'd stumble across any number of 20-minute splurges of decadent psychedelic madness.
The world has changed out of all recognition. And human beings have changed with it.
Their outrageous and convoluted plotlines seem ridden with shaggy countercultural concerns, long after the rest of popular culture had shaken off its collective 60s comedown.
A remarkable boy.
Indeed. You chose well, my dear.
The Tomorrow People. Time Slip. Raven. The Changes. The Owl Service. And one serial which, from the opening few minutes, gripped youthful viewers with its striking atonal music and megalithic imagery.
I was in the living room alone. This creepy music came on, and I thought, what was this? And then stones started to move around, and it was just like nothing I'd ever seen before.
Children of the Stones. An occult horror story set in an isolated English village, nestled in an ancient stone circle, where defiant teenagers take on an evil magus. But despite its fantastic subject material, Children of the Stones seem to address my own real childhood concerns about conformity, fitting in, and an abstract fear of the unknown, concerns which few contemporary children shows dare to deal with. Gareth Thomas, who plays Professor Adam Brake, agrees.
They wrote it extremely well. It made sense. And I think the youngsters were very good and were aware of the fact that they were just not being themselves, but they were being their own age. Apart from the mystical aspect of Children of the Stones, it's a very real story.
Children of the Stones tells the tale of an astrophysicist and his son who arrive in the village of Milbury to study the ancient stone circle that surrounds it. However, they soon learn that the quiet hamlet has a sinister secret linking the stones with a black hole in space, the power of which is used by the Lord of the Manor, a druid called Hendrick, to control the villagers, none of whom are able to leave the circle.
Leave the stones? You never will.
What do you mean?
Nobody leaves the circle.
Sidney Sager's score, performed by the Ambrosian Singers, the most inappropriate children's TV theme ever penned, warned of horrors lying ahead. The series creators were Trevor Ray and Jeremy Burnham.
There's still an enormous interest in Children of the Stones, and it's been heartwarming all through my career, and Trevor's, that, you know, it's still arousing interest all over the world, and an American composer called Robert Gross is turning it into an opera. It's sort of followed us through the years, which is very pleasing.
Jeremy Burnham had written for and acted in the classic 60s pop art spy series The Avengers, and Children of the Stones is clearly influenced by The Avengers, which would routinely feature strange goings-on in rural England. But there were also plot strands and stylistic steals from cult British horror films, such as The Wicker Man, Village of the Damned, and Nigel Neal's Quatermass and the Pit. Trevor Burnham also cites the book Harvest Home by Thomas Tryon as a possible inspiration. Ray and Burnham's signatures were all over a bewildering variety of 70s TV drama scripts, but Children of the Stones somehow became more than the sum of its parts. And loon-panted kids all over the land were soon captivated by the menacing tone of the brainwashed villagers known as the Happy Ones. Their hive-mind greeting spawned a disturbing new playground catchphrase, Happy Day.
Happy Day, sir.
It's a phrase that is not used. You know, nobody says Happy Day to each other. That's what makes it a bit eerie, and that's what we wanted, that this place isn't normal.
Happy Day to you.
But the whole thing about Happy Day came out of a rather pissed lunch.
Happy Days!
Veronica Strong plays Margaret Smythe in the series.
I thought it was a wonderful work. You don't make the sci-fi magazine every year in the top 50 not to have done something rather good.
Without diminishing the significance of the writer's dramatic influences, it would be impossible to imagine Children of the Stones without the inspiration of a strange and unique Wiltshire village, Avebury. A small collection of buildings, somehow caught in time within the borders of a vast prehistoric stone circle, renamed Milbury in the story, and the place where the series was filmed.
Although we changed the name to Milbury, we could still keep the topography and the geography of Avebury.
Some approach the circle scientifically, others superstitiously or spiritually. Children of the Stones itself falls somewhere between.
Don't meddle with the stones.
I think people are into the paranormal, but I think we sense that there are secrets out there, and we lucked into it.
I'm not the be-all, end-all. Somewhere, something is a lot bigger than I am.
I think that we're only at the beginning of human knowledge.
To try and understand why the series meant and continues to mean so much to a generation of children's television viewers, and to see how it inspired them, along with exploring the real history of the Stones themselves, I travelled to Avebury to meet an assortment of Stone Circle enthusiasts, fans and cast members, and even one conspicuously dissenting refusenik.
Here's the circle.
With the village inside it. Scary.
What is?
Not known anybody.
Oh, you soon will.
Suppose they all turn out to be nutters.
We're here around the middle of the North Circle in Avebury with Matthew Holbrook. Now, you're a druid, you're a Reiki practitioner, and you were a fan of Children of the Stones as a child. So what effect did it have on you?
It had a dramatic effect on me. Although I was a fan of other programmes of the era, like Doctor Who, I found Children of the Stones scared me a great deal more, I think because of the atmosphere it provided. But many of the themes resonated with me. I became interested in spirituality, paganism, but it also made me become very technical.
When you see the programme today, how do you think it stands up 35 years on?
I think it stands up very well. Certainly the clothes and the hairstyles and the special effects date it, but the story itself is tremendous.
People have been worshipping here for 1,000 years or more.
Worshipping what?
The sun, maybe?
What do you think, as a druid, as someone that, you know, practices in these kind of spaces, what do you think the purpose of them was?
I see two reasons. I would say as a cosmic computer and a meeting point. Mm. So a computer in the sense that you can tell what time of year it is by where the sun is in relation to the stones. Yeah. Like at Stonehenge, summer solstice sun rises above the Healstone. And a meeting point because people processed to the circles, and still do, and have their seasonal celebrations in them.
And it's reasonable to assume that your life would have been very different then had you not seen Children of the Stones as a child.
Very much so, because I wouldn't have had the inspiration to be as technical as Peter, who had the same character name as me, Matthew.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wouldn't have been introduced to Stone Circle's paganism.
Adam,
mm-hmm.
Would you do something for me?
Of course.
Touch one of the stones.
What?
I just want to see if you're the kind of man I think you are.
Juliet Pearson, you're a latecomer to being a fan of Children of the Stones, aren't you?
Yes.
And now you're here in Avebury, where it's filmed and set. What do you think?
I think it's fantastic. Incredibly educational. The technical stuff that was in it, I just can't see most children's programmes having that level of technical detail.
There's lots of strong sort of female characters, aren't there? They're not just standing around waiting to be rescued, are they?
No, not at all. They're very independent, both of the sort of main female leads.
It seems to me like it's about non-conformity as well, that they're kind of opposing this society where everyone has to say happy day and all behave in the same way.
Yeah, but they also recognised that there was something going on, but they couldn't quite put their finger on it.
Yeah.
And slips into it.
Yeah.
And quite often I think that happens, is that you go along with something and suddenly realise you've become part of something that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
Although it's slightly sinister.
Hello.
Hello.
Can we have a ride?
Where to?
Oh, just round the village. Show you the sights.
Well, so this is the basic plot of 7 episodes of Children of the Stones. There's a village in a stone circle, and an astrophysicist, Professor Brake, goes to make a study of it with his son, Matthew. And when they get there, they find out that all the people seem to be slightly kind of Stepford Wives-ish, and they keep saying happy day when they say goodbye to each other. And it gradually becomes clear to them that the Lord of the Manor, who's a former astrophysicist himself, called Hendrick, seems to be running some kind of cult in which the people go for dinner with him, and after they've had dinner with him, they become these benign, happy people wandering around saying happy day. There's a weird poacher who lives inside a burial chamber called Di, played by the fantastic character actor Freddie Jones, and the astrophysicist and his son make friends with the curator of the museum, Margaret, and her daughter, Sandra, who tries to help them in their struggle against whatever this weird cult is. But it turns out that the circle's been built to harness the power of a cosmic ray coming out of a black hole in space, and that the circle exists in a kind of other dimension where time stopped, and that anyone who disobeys the Lord of the Manor gets turned into a standing stone themselves. That's about all you need to know, really.
All right, Mrs. Smythe, would you care to summarise?
Certainly, Professor. The stones are undressed sarsen, weighing approximately 40 tonnes each. There are 100 in the original
stone. I'm standing in the museum now at Avery with Ros Cleal, the curator, which is, of course, the part that Sandra's mum has in series. And we're looking at a model of the circle and all the archaeology of the area. Presumably, as the curator of the Avery Museum, you don't feel that the purpose of the circle was to harness an evil ray from space.
No.
No. Okay. Well, if we look at this, what do you think the builders of this had in mind?
Well, and that is a really hard question, but it's obviously, I think, to do with religion. I think, you know, they obviously believed something really, really powerful. I think they probably felt they had to do what they were doing in order to make their lives better, or, you know, to prevent some harm coming to them. You know, something that really would make you move 500 or so stones, which is what there is in the whole complex. You know, it's not just a circle.
Is it difficult running this space and having to reconcile all the different meanings people try to impose on this area?
What we try and do is, for the people who want to know about the history and archaeology, in a way, that's why the museum is here. So we try and give them, you know, the latest theories and put the archaeological information across in interesting ways. For people who come for sort of spiritual reasons or because they just love the place, I mean, we sort of feel that in a way we need to stand back and just let them enjoy it, because they don't need us giving them lots of facts.
Getting facts in the way.
That's right.
What's the current thinking on how the stones were erected?
There are different ways of doing it. I mean, it's not impossible, and there are societies today who manipulate, you know, or in recent past have manipulated very heavy stones. There are various ways of moving them and pushing them up. Mostly it's done with sort of pushing them up gradually, with sort of putting like railway sleeper type bits of timber underneath, and you raise them bit by bit, sort of levering them up. So, yeah, it's a slow process, as you would imagine.
There's a strange sort of edit in the opening titles where they try and score the crescendo of this tritone-ridden, terrifying music to the sort of surging up of a stone. We're standing on the rim of the northernmost of the two inner circles of the big Avery Henge, with Catherine Livy, who was Sandra, one of the three children that resists being taken over by the stones in the series. So is it quite a big deal coming back here today, then?
Yes, it is, actually.
Is it nice?
It's lovely.
Yeah.
Absolutely lovely. Yeah.
Well, what can you remember about being here as a teenager filming the programme, then?
It was a magical, magical time, and Peter Graham Scott, who was the director, was very conscious of using a lot of children, so made sure the majority of it was filmed during the children's holidays, the school holidays.
Something seems to happen to them. I don't know what it is, but something seems to happen.
They change.
It was the long, hot summer.
Yeah, the summer of 76. I mean, anyone of our age or older can remember what a big deal that was. One of the scenes in it that you're in turns up on a TV pole as one of the 100 most frightening scenes of British television.
I think it was the part where my character Sandra had actually finally been infected or turned into one of the happy ones.
Goodbye.
Not goodbye, Matt. We'll see you soon.
We're walking into the southern part of the henge now. Catherine, this is where there was a scene where, I think it was off this bank, that Freddie Jones, who's playing Di the poacher, got turned into a stone and rolled down the hill. Remember doing that scene?
Yes. He was just fantastic, but he was always in character.
Right.
So there was sort of the feeling at the beginning was he a little bit strange? But no, not at all. He was just always in character. And we used to laugh an awful lot. But one of the things I remember very clearly is when we were filming here, of course, these stones were augmented.
Yeah.
They were augmented with polystyrene stones. And it was sort of trying to work out which was the one that was going to be lifted up. And so when Freddie sort of would turn into the stone, the crew would very often play tricks and say, look, Kate, could you go and sort of pick up that stone and just bring it over here? Because I like to make myself quite useful. And I knew it was just polystyrene. Yeah. And, of course, it was the actual real one.
Right. When the series was put together and you saw the finished job, were you surprised by it? Was it what you'd been expecting?
I think it exceeded everybody's expectations. I thought it was extremely good and something I was very proud of.
There's a level of thought and threat in it, and also a way of talking directly to kids as if they're equals that I don't know if you'd find in a comparable piece of work today. Would you agree with that?
Well, interestingly, I just sort of watched the series again, knowing that you and I were going to be talking, and that came across to me immediately, was that it wasn't patronised, it wasn't children's television in inverted commas, it was a really good story.
Oh, you must have noticed. Some of us are normal and the rest are happy ones.
Yes.
But they don't seem happy. Oh, I know, they always behave well. Never lose their tempers, always shine in class. But they're like...
zombies.
Yes.
400 metres across and hanging like a football field. Over the valley of a stone circle, wondering what the crop will yield.
This is Upwards at 45 Degrees by Julian Cope, and I'm standing with Julian, musician, writer, antiquarian, in the north part of the circle. You live in this area, you've written a lot about it, you've done an amazing job on popularising and making accessible to people writing about this kind of archaeology. What's your take on the series Children of the Stones?
What I couldn't stand about it was that it was another either-or, right? The idea that a shamanistic cult could be started here, it's so likely.
Well, you know, you've had a go, haven't you?
Yeah, man. People were taking over. Messiahs have been taking over, you know, islands all over Britain since the year Dot.
Yeah.
I think the last one was in St Kilda, where a guy did convince them all that he was Christ.
Mm.
One Benjamin.
Right.
A blonde sailor. But like the Wicker Man, what I thought was awful was that it only portrayed non-Christianity as culty to the point of being, I don't know, Aztec and grotesque.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that a lot of paganism was not like that. I'm sure towards the end of taking on Christianity, paganism had fallen as far as it possibly could be. But at the same time, yeah, Hitler and Stalin lurk in all that post-war stuff.
But you know what? Watching it again, right, it seems to me that the writers, perhaps without even realising it, become increasingly sympathetic to Hendrik.
The bear cult is probably as old as any other religion. What are you suggesting? It was started by the primitive cave dweller who saw your supernova explode?
Primitive cave dweller. I think you do him an injustice. According to legend, he was a visionary, a spiritual leader, a man of destiny.
I beg his pardon.
I think you might be well advised to do so.
They start to put the case, and then later on the scientist gets annoyed with Hendrik and he says to him, you think you're a magus, a scholar magician leading his people to beauty and truth. And when he puts it like that, you think, well, it sounds quite an attractive proposition.
But so do you end up feeling sympathy for the Lord of Summer Isle.
Yeah.
Because he's presenting another somewhat valid worldview, because they're so removed from everything. But he's an absolute bastard.
Yeah, but he wins, doesn't he, the Wicker Man. In the Wicker Man, the Christian monotheistic Calvinist coming in gets burned in a big thing, but here they escape.
But that's my thing about the either-or, you see.
Yeah.
I don't think that we can free ourselves from monotheism until we get over that feeling of glee at the monotheist getting his ass kicked.
I'm in the Stone Circle talking to Mike Pitts, who's the editor of British Archaeology magazine, but you also used to be the curator of the museum here in the early 80s, which was the job that Margaret, one of the heroines of Children of the Stones, had. Now, I understand you never saw the programme.
I did not, no.
But back then, you must have had people coming in.
Well, I didn't know anything about it until I came to Avebury. And we had kids coming into the museum saying, is it true if I touch the stones, will I disappear?
And you told them it was, presumably.
Well, of course, yes.
Yeah. She also helped overcome the efforts of an evil magus to make Avebury into a kind of receptor for a strange ray from space that exerted mind control.
I think anybody who wants to do anything in Avebury that's slightly different needs to confront the evil magus. I'd come from a very academic environment in London University, where, you know, as archaeologists, we're brought up to think you could answer the question to everything. I come down here and realise, actually, we can't. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things about the past we don't know. And so there's part of understanding Avebury, and part of our relationship with Avebury today has to come from fiction, has to come from imagination. It's not just about science.
Yeah, it's from fiction and imagination. That's really interesting. Part. Yeah, partly, yeah. So in a way, when artists, musicians, writers, whatever, respond to here, you have to listen in a way, because they might be thinking along the same lines perhaps as the people that developed it.
Well, I think they might be, because we wouldn't know if they were, but I think where there is a productive engagement is to think that at the time Avebury was being built and being used 3,000 or 4,000, 5,000 years ago, I think people then would have had the same sort of mixed responses that we have today. It's big, it's expansive, it has a long history. You know, in 2000 BC, there were generations of activities behind the then present.
Yeah.
And many of those things that happened, people would have known about, but many of them would have already by then have become folk stories. And so I think an individual's response to Avebury in 2,000 or 3,000 BC could have been as varied as an individual's response today.
I am standing here in the heart of old England. Sunrise through your stones, astronomically measured, and I'm feeling humble.
We're standing sort of in the middle of the circle, just south of the pub, the Red Lion, that features heavily in the series, with James McGowan, who runs a website dedicated to the Children of the Stones series. You sat and watched the programme, you saw stones moving around. You imagined, presumably from your Scottish lair, that all of England was full of sinister moving rocks in rural villages.
Well, I hope so, anyway. I mean, when I was an adult, I moved down to England and immediately came over to Avebury to,
did you?
To see the stones, pretty much, yes.
And what did you do here in Avebury when you got here?
Well, what I mostly did was reenact various scenes from the programme.
Right, what in particular?
There's a bit just across from where we are just now where Matthew crashes his bike into the old poacher.
That's right, he crashes his bike by those trees.
That's
there.
Correct, yeah.
How did seeing Children of the Stones as a child affect you in your life?
I did spend most of the 80s trying to write computer games based on the programme. When my little first home computer came out in the 80s, I spent quite a lot of time trying to write these games.
Right. There is stuff in the show that addresses the fact that this place was, you know, actively suppressed and dismantled in some ways by Christianity.
It wasn't just that they ignored the old religion, they actively destroyed it.
Return to us the innocence that once we knew. Complete the circle. Make us at one with nature and the elements.
What question do you get asked most by people stumbling across your Children of the Stones fan site?
The most asked question that I get is what happened to the painting in the series Quod Non Est?
Well, there's an inscription. Quod non...
Quod non est, similo, dissimilaque, quod est.
Which means?
Something like, I deny the existence of that which exists.
Excellent.
This is my study where I've kept the mock-up of the picture all these years. This picture, it depicts the village in primeval times with a brilliant column of light coming up from the stone circle up into the starlit heavens, and all the villagers are fleeing away from it because it's pretty terrifying.
Mrs. Crabtree, come and look at this.
The boy, Matthew, found this picture in a junk shop. Hendrick suggests that maybe the picture found him.
It's very raw, powerful.
Ian Cuthbertson was absolutely ideal for Hendrick.
I think probably that Les Matthews has the original. It's got exactly the right kind of scary note.
I've always felt there's Children of the Stones references all over popular culture, like in Simon Pegg's Hot Fuzz comedy film. And the comic book series Strange Haven, with its storyline of a village trapped inside a stone circle, seemed to me to be influenced by Children of the Stones. Its creator, Gary Spencer Millage, acknowledges the comparison.
I was quite horrified to see how similar it was to the opening of Strange Haven. There's a rock in the middle of the road in the TV series which turns into an old woman. A car almost drives into, and in Strange Haven, there's a woman in the road which a guy crashes into, but turns out to be a tree. Ley lines and stone circles are a big feature of that kind of mystical aspect of old English villages, and I think, especially when people start connecting up the stones and older buildings, older churches, to try and create ley lines is a good example of the human desire to find patterns in chaos.
I'm just about to finish a sequel, which nobody's read yet. It takes place 25 years later.
But the whole thing of a time set means he can do exactly that.
I think it would be wonderful if there was a sequel, as long as I was in it.
It still inspires interest, you know, especially as this Robert Gross is turning it into an opera. But how he's going to do it, God knows.
Well, I think Adam would have to be a tenor, and Hendrick would have to be the baritone.
So what did I learn visiting Avebury to talk to the Children of the Stones and associated archaeologists and mystics? As a child, I thought the series was about resistance to conformity and the misfit individual's struggle for self-determination, and it inspired in me a lifelong interest in stone circles and long barrows. But revisiting it now, Children of the Stone seems more complex and ambiguous than perhaps the writers intended. Were we invited to be a little sympathetic to the druid Hendrick and his attempts to mould a better tomorrow? Were the rationalists leaving the time-locked villages to their fate really the heroes of the piece? After a day wandering the Henge, I was none the wiser. And Children of the Stones, like the Avebury Circle itself, remained a mystery. Happy day!
Happy Days, The Children of the Stones was presented by Stuart Lee and produced in Salford by Stephen Garner.